This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Saunas are rising in popularity across the UK, with over 600 available to the public, from beaches and lakes to rural settings. Many people enjoy it for the health benefits, as a way to switch off from stresses and screens, or as a different way to socialise with their friends and family. We're joined today by Evan Schwerbrock, World's Strongest Disabled Man 2025, blind strength and conditioning coach, and creator of Kane and Able Fitness, to hear about some of the benefits of saunas for blind and partially sighted people. Hi Evan, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So a few years ago, before it got very big here in the UK, you wrote a blog post about the benefits of saunas for blind and partially sighted people, and you are blind yourself and very sporty. So can you talk us through when you first began using saunas and why you enjoy them?
I started using one probably back in 2015 at our local YMCA here. And it was a kind of a tradition for me and my brother to do after our hard workouts. And then I also started doing that with the training partner that I was luckily able to meet in graduate school. And that was, again, kind of the end of our really hard training week. Was on Fridays, we do our couple hour training session. And then there was a lazy river at our university. And we were able to just hang out in that and go back and forth between the sauna and steam room. And it made for a very, very enjoyable, less miserable end to our training week. So after doing that and then learning about all the wonderful research about it, I decided to write that article so that other people would get interested in it as well.
Absolutely. And can you talk us through some of the points you found? So maybe we can start with how it helps with a sedentary lifestyle.
Yes. So there's a huge issue with people in the blind community and being sedentary. And if we think about using a sauna, obviously we're going to be very sedentary there as well, but there's still going to be a lot of benefits to it because we are getting this hormetic stress, this stress that riles up our body and says, hey, something's going on here and we need to adapt to it. So we have enough stressors in our life. So being able to kind of pick that poison of heat stress and getting all the huge benefits of that is a really great way to start.
And for people that really enjoy sports like yourself, especially strength training, what are some of the benefits of sitting down rather than just resting on a bench, for example, or laying down after a particularly hard workout?
So because saunas have that inherent heat stress, there's going to be some different things that happen. It is going to help with circulation. There's some endothelial function that is improved. So we're going to be able to have our bodies learning how to sweat easier, vasodilate better. I actually am a strength conditioning coach for some blind sports. So heat stress is a huge problem that can really mess with our performance. Being more and more adapted to that is very beneficial. And then saunas also help with insulin sensitivity. So anybody who's diabetic, pre-diabetic, just hoping to have better metabolic health, and then the benefits that come with that for gaining muscle instead of having too much insulin in your system, your pancreas doesn't know quite how to react to blood sugar and kind of overdoes it. And then we start gaining a little bit more fat than we'd like because of that imbalance. Saunas are able to help with that as well.
And you also wrote about some brain benefits of saunas. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. So the beauty of doing anything stressful is our brain goes, I am trying to survive out here and I'm going to have to adapt to whatever the heck is going on out there. So your brain will produce more BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is also a prevalent benefit of exercise. And basically this is, hey, I had this big stress going on. I have to rewire the brain a little bit in order to make sure that I'm better and better at this task. Because especially if you do something repeatedly, let's say from an exercise perspective, you work on sprinting and you get better from a technical standpoint, or you do some heavy squats or something and you get better and better at doing that because it's a consistent stimulus. Your brain goes, okay, this wasn't a one-off thing. I need to get used to this. And so it builds in that hormone production of, again, that BDNF, which helps you to be able to learn things better, rewire, and use the neuroplasticity that you still have to be able to create more efficient, better pathways and all those nerve cells in your brain. So it's kind of like this secret drug that your body puts out in order to amplify your learning. A really fun fact about BDNF is there's a lot of like memory athletes who are memorizing a deck of cards as fast as possible or doing all these crazy memory feats. They will literally link that practice with exercise, because that BDNF output that comes with the stress of exercise, or also sauna, is a really great way to.
Obviously, you shouldn't sort of stay in a sauna as long as you possibly can without a build-up and knowing how long is safe, but it's a measurable way if you're trying to up your resilience. You can stay an extra 30 seconds, and that might help you learn how to deal with discomfort a bit better, whether that's kind of in your own life or in a workout as well.
Absolutely. And you make a really good point that it's not necessarily a dose-dependent relationship. It's not you're tougher because you were in there for 45 minutes versus half an hour. There is a kind of a threshold that you need to hit within reason. Most studies are about 20 minutes, and then there's some where it's pushed to 30 minutes to an hour. But whenever it's those long-term sauna stays, it's always in a slightly lower temperature, and it's always with people who have been acclimated for a long time. Very commonly, those dramatic studies are done with Finnish people where, they grew up as part of that in their culture. But we also have to think logically where 2 minutes in a sauna isn't going to get us very much. So starting to slowly dose yourself in and then not starting too quickly. We see this with exercise a lot of times as well, especially, around New Year's time. Everybody starts getting in the gym. They get incredibly sore because they haven't been doing very much. They overdo it their first one or two sessions, and then they are just limping around, the rest of the time. So that's really discouraging. But with sauna, we have to be extra careful because they've done studies where they purposely put people into heat exhaustion. And in a laboratory setting, they found that they can induce wild heat stress to an extreme level, and then it puts people in shock so much that they aren't able to adapt to that anymore, and they actually stay heat sensitive there on out. So if you were one of those guinea pigs in those labs getting tested and overheated on purpose to see what happens, those people they found actually don't bounce back, don't wind up being able to resensitize to heat nearly as well. Their body is in a way permanently wrecked. So what we have to do is just be smart with our sauna exposure, not try to turn it into a tough person competition, and instead just get the lovely stimulus of socializing and sweating for a bit and then get out.
How would you recommend someone approach a sauna if they're going for the first time?
I would definitely encourage hydration. That's a very good idea. You can even bring some electrolytes. I'm literally sipping on some right now as we're talking. A really big cue of your body is going to be your heart rate is going to elevate, and it acts as mild cardio activity. That's why there's a lot of cardiac benefits to this as well, and a lot less incidence of cardiac issues or incidents, medically down the road if people have been sauning very consistently. However, you're not going to be able to get quite the same effect as typical cardio exercise. I will mention that. But noticing that heart rate raising for a bit and then not getting to the point where essentially you wind up in a huge sympathetic nervous system response. All of us have been a little bit panicked sometime in our lives. So if we start sweating way too much, if we start going, I don't know if I should be in here, basically, once you start doubting a little bit, then it's perfectly fine to go ahead and step out, cool off, and then reapproach it. Because as with exercise, you're going to be able to do a little bit and get a lot out of it. So really riding the wave of that minimum effective dose being all the more beneficial for you in the beginning is a smart and safe way to do it.
And there are a few things to keep in mind if you have limited vision and you're going into a sauna. They can be small spaces, there are hot surfaces exposed, the timers may be very visually focused. So, what are some of the things people should think about if they're going to a new sauna or to a sauna for the first time?
So when we're thinking about the logistics of the sauna, there's going to be a couple things we have to worry about. Like you said, the timers, those can be manual or they can be digital. I've had some of my blind athletes complain that their gym only has a digital screen with just touch buttons and nothing tactile, which is very inaccessible. So with that, with learning the logistics of the sauna, how big it is, because the smaller the space is, the easier it is to heat. And then there's also very commonly these heating elements that we want to make sure to really steer clear of. We don't want you getting burnt in there. We just want you feeling nice and toasty, not getting toasted. So asking any staff there, any sighted person who's able to go with you, anything like that, especially your first couple times to really get the lay of the land. mind is going to be a great way. So take that time to slow down, understand the entire layout, whether it has to be, you know, a tactile map drawn on your hand or using your cane to be able to tap the heating elements, any way to help you understand how to best navigate in that area, that's going to be a great way to go. So ask as many questions and take your time the first couple of times until you feel very comfortable in how to approach it. A lot of times with saunas as well, you're going to have multi-tiered seating where there's multiple different benches, and a lot of times people will sit up and lie down. So if you are a cane user, or if it being a little bit darker or a little bit steamier, like some wet saunas will be, if that would impede your vision more than what you're used to and you would lose a lot of visual acuity, I would highly recommend using your white cane if you have one and being able to tap around a little bit so that you don't wind up coming accidentally too friendly with a stranger who's just lying it down in there, not paying any attention. A lot of people will use it to relax and kind of zone out and then assume that anybody going in or out is going to take care of the whole personal space issue themselves. So, you know, we kind of want to make that as easy as possible. Staying close to the door is going to also allow you to have a little bit more graduated exposure. There's going to be a little bit of cooling off closer to the door, but then also people going in and out, you're going to get a little bit of a breeze, a little bit of a reprieve. And eventually one of those breezes is going to be like, oh man, that feels like paradise out there. And that might be a great indicator your first few times to go ahead and step out and relax again. I think sauna can be an absolutely wonderful way to socialize. A very big point that I always make of, I think a lot of the blind community should pursue going to the gym, because you are going to wind up meeting a lot more people than in your living room doing home workouts. So it's a wonderful opportunity to socialize. But when we're in a gym setting, there's a lot of metal clanging, trying to get to our next machine, things like that. There's a lot more distractions than just sitting in a sauna. And it's a lot easier to socialize there when the logistics are as simple as sit down and sweat. So I think there's a huge benefit that can come with that from a proper socialization standpoint. And then also, if we are able to choose our stress and get better at, you know, activating these heat shock proteins, all the fancy things that happens with that, basically we just are in an environment where we learn that we can adapt to things and then go from there. I feel that transfers a lot to the rest of our lives. And a big point that I did a poor job of making earlier is getting out of the sedentary nature that's very common with blindness. That may mean that you can only do a hard workout for you, you know, two or three times a week, but being able to fill in those gaps with a couple of sauna sessions can really help give you a ton of the benefit without quite the same level of physical exhaustion. And it's really going to more gracefully ease you into a more active lifestyle.
Absolutely. And you write about lots of different elements of fitness on your website. Where can people find more of your resources and learn more about you?
Yes, they can go to caneenablefitness.com, but it's spelled funny, CaneenableFitness fitness, because I'm very adamant that even if we have a cane, we are still plenty capable of doing things. There's a blog on there. We have online programs, remote coaching, all kinds of different resources there. And then also on social media, just with Cane Enable Fitness, where people are able to get a lot of tips and tricks and resources to be able to help themselves.
Well, thank you so much, Evan Schwerbrock, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.